Let me welcome you all to the third and final day of the Speaker's Corner of the Oracle at Erowid. We'll be talking about the future, and it is my great pleasure to introduce an amazing artist and longtime personal friend, and someone that, yes, I helped de-virginize by bringing her here for DJ Christ Superstar, for which she was the set designer, exactly, in 1999, Miss Peggy Nelson.
Thanks, Mark. Thanks for coming, everybody. What I'm going to do today is a couple of selections from an audio tour installation I'm doing here this year. The audio tour is these MP3s, and there's an entrance, which I'm going to set up at about 1:30. The rack is right out here. I didn't drag it out there this morning. And the idea is you just wander around the playa, and when you feel like you've arrived at a listening station, you press one of the entries, and maybe it'll match up with something that you're looking at. So I'm going to start with a dream report. This is dream report number 2. I had a dream that we arrived this year, but we weren't camping over here. We were camping over by 10 o'clock by all the clubs, which I never do because I like it a little bit quieter. But we were over there. We hadn't even set up the tent yet, and we thought, well, let's go see what's happening because stuff was already happening. So we went out there, and it was like Sunday or something, very early. We went out, and we walked down the line, and it just kept going, and we realized that this year Burning Man was so big that it went all the way out to Regular Man. So we felt like that was really great. I mean, look at all these people this year. Now, we gather here like serotonin in a synapse, I was thinking. Black dots, you know, clustered around the head of the neuron, like those tadpoles we used to see as kids in the pond. All big heads and thin, wiggly little tails. Thousands of us, all facing forward, sucking the algae from the muck, jockeying for position, trying to build up enough numbers or energy to make that leap out into the sun, some bright gap of possibility between water and sky. We're here because here is our best place to do that. You hope you will make that leap, and you hope you will not be alone in that. Back there, on the grid, living on time, we're too readily pulled from one side to the other. But here, there is a balletic suspension midway in which we can feel free of time. So I was wondering if anybody saw the Terracotta Warriors this year. There's a few of them here.
No.
Yeah? Yeah? A little expeditionary force. They're inside in a hollowed out shell kind of thing. They brought some sand inside so they could feel right at home in their environment. It's near the dome and where they have the opera.
Near the dome?
Yeah, one of the domes. So I was outside. I peeked in and looked at them, but mainly I was looking for something else buried. I was outside looking for it. It was a monument to burned books, so it was actually an onument because it was underground. You just look through a little window and then they're under there. But there was nothing there because everything was all kind of dug up and in construction, and so there was no under at the moment. So I went inside the dome since I was nearby, and the dome is very impressive, of course. You've all been in it probably, but it's a Baroque monstrosity. It's just an excess of excess. There's decoration on top of decoration, on top of gold, on top of paint, on top of banners and incense, music and lights, and it's just too much. So I came back outside, and it was a little bit starting to blow, not quite the sandstorm, but almost there. And the warriors were silent as they had been for centuries, and I thought, wait a minute, what am I doing here? You know, like what brought me to this place at this time? And I had no answer for that question, and I felt the very familiar beginnings of existential panic creeping at the back of my brainstem. And I walked a bit out into the wind, and I was surrounded by these partially built art installations and some pastel banners flapping in the wind. And of course, you'd think that was even more existential, and it was. But then I realized that it was all right. Not that I felt all right. I realized the panic was all right. Because life is arbitrary. It's something we make up along with others in the world, and there's no teleology or fate. There's no intrinsic meaning, only extrinsic and temporary accommodations that we make with things, and hopefully they with us. And so that feeling of free fall, of panic, of existential nausea, I think is an accurate response to this state that we're actually in and our desire for some kind of floor, some kind of solidity for script. I couldn't justify being here, but maybe I don't have to. I just am here, and maybe that's enough. And conversely, maybe it is in those places where we feel most at home and most comfortable, where we feel there is a floor and there is a script, that are kind of the most dangerous. Because there we get too comfortable, too easily swayed in a belief that we are meant to be there, that there is a purpose to the intersection of us and our location and what we happen to be doing, that we belong. We never do, not in that way. You can carve 1,000 warriors to accompany you on your quest, but they cannot see. They will not speak. And they may be eventually buried in the indifferent sands of time. So, let me get a little personal here. Let's talk about one of my ex-boyfriends. Yeah, I know, that might not look like much. Anyway, here's the scenario. I was staring at the lattice under the porch, that wooden lattice kind of thing. I was staring at it as if I would memorize it, like it was the most complicated physics problem in the world, and I was going to solve it by sheer force of will. We were in the car, parked outside the house, nobody gotten out of the car, staring at the porch, having one of those conversations. You know, the kind where you really need to come to some kind of agreement and there's not going to be any agreement, so you just kind of keep talking, hoping to postpone or delay, or maybe some kind of miracle will happen or whatever. But we weren't talking about us. We were talking about whether or not we should join the party. The Communist Party. As if it was 1917. As if the whole 20th century never happened. Seriously. But that's one of the dangers of being an idealist. If you're seduced by these beautiful theories, and it is a beautiful theory, from each according to his ability, to each according to his needs. But the problem with theories is that they don't always match up with reality, and sometimes you don't even notice reality because you're so involved with the theory. And the reality was that I thought I was never going to be able to get out of that car. So the lattice was just broken, it was gray, the house was like 100 years old, and you know, we weren't getting to any kind of agreement, and the view was aggressively uninteresting, and I didn't want to be looking at him. Well, what happened was, I joined, and he didn't. He thought it would be bad for his career. I'm sure it was right. And I didn't care about careers back then. So, I know you're wondering what it was like. I'll tell you. You probably heard the revolution didn't really go as planned. Yeah. Well, we organized some visiting speakers. We printed a lot of flyers and did support for various organizations around town. Supported strikes and things like that. We had a lot of vegetarian potlucks. It was nothing like 1917. It wasn't even that much like Steinbeck. So eventually I left. Not supposed to do that, but you know, there's a lot in life you're not supposed to do. And what about him? Well, his career didn't really go as planned either, although I suppose it went well enough. He bought a house, one with a wooden lattice under the porch. There's a few more if you'll indulge me.
Oh yeah, no, you're right.
Two or three.
All right.
So I don't know if you guys have heard about that. What?
You said there's a few more.
A few more.
I think you're getting hit on.
Oh man, hecklers. So I don't know if you guys have heard about the sport of bog snorkeling, which I became very interested in partly because of the name and the sheer ridiculousness of it. Okay, so seriously, you swim through a peat bog. You have to be in it. You can't be on top of it. You can't have your head out. You have a snorkel. That's the snorkel part of the sport. And the fastest one wins. You can wear little goggles, but you're immersed in the bog. Like, you're physically completely under the bog, and you can't see anything. It's thick mud with plants and things of varying viscosities, and You know, it's the kind of thing you can't imagine putting your face into. And then you can't imagine pulling your entire self out of. And you can't be on top of it. You have to be in it. And you can't use conventional swimming strokes, even. You have to kind of, like, wiggle your way to the end of the thing. And
competitive sport?
It's competitive in Scotland, or, you know, where they have bugs. So you just get in there, and then, of course, you don't know if you're going in the right direction. You just kind of hope that you are, and, you know, and it conspires to hold you back and suck you under and, you know, thwart you in every way. And it's just completely, you know, so nothing but sheer willpower can get you into that bog. Nothing but insistent belief can get you through it. And then nothing but supreme effort can extract you at the end. That bog is enlightenment. Good luck. But some of them, like, had to go home. I don't know if you noticed, but, you know, we're sorry. They had to split off from the camp and go do what they had to do, you know, check in on some things, take care of some stuff. So the rest of the camp, you know, because we're off the grid, was left to its own devices. There's no communication possible, really, between home and camp, except by personal visitation, which is necessarily lengthy, expensive, and infrequent. Anyway, some time went by, and they came back. But it wasn't August, so there was nothing here, not a trace. So at a loss, they kind of wandered around on the playa for a while, because, you know, it's a pretty far way to go to just turn around and go right back. Where was everybody anyway? I mean, never mind their camp, where was anything? But after enduring one of those furious dust storms that spring up from nowhere, you know, like from yesterday, they found something, some movement. It was a half-submerged sign, brushed it off, kind of make it out, what it says, like Sharpie, gone to somewhere. I don't know, couldn't make it out. But had they but known, if they had returned at the end of the summer, camp would be here as before. Lively colony, eagerly awaiting their return. So perhaps they stayed and waited, or went away and came back later and solved the mystery for themselves. But we don't know. They left no other clues. We don't know, that is, unless we are also here in August with them. Because some places don't occur in space, but in time. In closing, I'd like to thank everybody for coming to the philosophy club that Mark has organized. It's all here. Just be sure you want to come in if you're in. If you seek knowledge, you may learn things you wish you didn't know. If you seek community, you may learn that its preferred groupings do not exactly match yours. If you seek control, you may gain isolation. If you seek experience, you may go through things that sort of rip your life and your worldview apart, all part of the party. And if you seek happiness, you may find that you no longer know what it means. If you ever did, you will find that you're launched along paths that lead through strange landscapes, that branch off and regroup in bewildering combinations, that there are no signs, except the ones you've tacked up, most of which have come down in the wind, and in any case are all too little and too late. And even if you could go back and retrace your steps, you would no longer recognize where you started. You would no longer fit through that door, even see it if you happen nearby. So then the only thing to do, really, is to continue on. Try to make something of it as you go. Try to tell interesting stories by the campfire at night. Try to carve objects, or paint itinerant portraits, or offer and trade advice with others. Put up some signs pointing to places you've been. Although no one will be able to read the letters, and in any case, you're no longer exactly sure of the direction. What you have is your mutating self, and the mutating journey. With no foundation, no reference, no guideposts except what you make up yourself. So Listen to stories. Watch for signs. Stop at campfires. Run. Thank you.
Yay!
Some more is available should anyone want to indulge.